This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents All the Ugly and Wonderful Things, a novel. Written by Bryn Greenwood. Performed by Georgina Marie.
Part 1. 1. Amy. March 1975. My mother always started the story by saying, "Well, she was born in the back seat of a stranger's car," as though that explained why Wavy wasn't normal. It seemed to me that could happen to anybody. Maybe on the way to the hospital your parents' respectable middle-class car broke down. That was not what happened to Wavy. She was born in the back seat of a stranger's car because Uncle Liam and Aunt Val were homeless, driving through Texas when their old beat-up van broke down. 9 months pregnant, Aunt Val hitchhiked to the next town for help. If you ever considered playing Good Samaritan to a pregnant woman, think about cleaning that up. I learned all this from eavesdropping on Mom's Tuesday Night Book Club. Sometimes they talked about books, but mostly they gossiped. That was where Mom first started polishing the tragic and edifying story of Wavonna Quinn. After Wavy was born, Mom didn't hear from Aunt Val for almost 5 years. The first news she had was that Uncle Liam had been arrested for dealing drugs, and Aunt Val needed money. Then Aunt Val got arrested for something Mom wouldn't say, leaving no one to take care of Wavy. The day after that second phone call, Grandma visited and argued with Mom behind closed doors about reaping what you sow, and blood is thicker than water. Grandma, my soft-in-the-middle cookie-baking grandma, shouted, "She's family! If you won't take her, I will!" We took her. Mom promised Leslie and me new toys, but we were so excited about meeting our cousin that we didn't care. Wavy was our only cousin, because according to Mom, Dad's brother was gay. Leslie and I, at 9 and going on 7, made up stories about Wavy that were pure Grimm's fairy tales. Starved, kept in a cage, living in the wilderness with wolves. The day Wavy arrived, the weather suited our gloomy theories. Dark and rainy, with gusting wind. Of course it would have been more fitting if Wavy had arrived in a black limo or a horse-drawn carriage instead of the social worker's beige sedan. Sue Inaldo was a plump woman in a pantsuit, but for me, she was Santa Claus, bringing me a marvelous present. Before Sue could get a rain bonnet over her elaborate Dolly Parton hair, Wavy hopped out of the back seat, dangling a plastic grocery bag in one hand. She was delicate and soaked to the skin by the time she reached the front door. Leslie's face fell when she saw our cousin, but I wasn't disappointed. As soon as my mother opened the door, Wavy stepped in and surveyed her new home with a bottomless look I would grow to love, but that would eventually drive my mother to despair. Her eyes were dark, but not brown. Gray? Green? Blue? You couldn't really tell. Just dark and full of a long view of the world. Her eyelashes and eyebrows were translucent to match her hair. Silver blonde, it clung to her head and ran trails of water off her shoulders onto the entryway tile.
"Wavonna, sweetie, I'm your Aunt Brenda."
It was a voice I didn't recognize, the way she pitched her voice high, falsely bright, and gave Sue an anxious look.
Is she okay?
As okay as she ever is. She didn't say a word to me on the drive over. The foster family she's been with this week, they said she was quiet as a mouse.
Has she been to a doctor?
She went, but she wouldn't let anyone touch her. She kicked two nurses and punched the doctor.
My mother's eyes went wide, and Leslie took a step back.
"Okay, then," Mom cooed. "Do you have some clothes in your bag there, Wavonna? Let's get you into something dry, okay?"
She must have expected Wavy to fight her, but when she reached for the grocery bag, Wavy let it go. My mother opened it and frowned at the contents.
"Where are the rest of her clothes?"
"That's it," Sue said. "She came to us wearing a man's undershirt. Those are the clothes the foster family got together for her." I'm sure Amy has something she can wear for now. Putting her hands on her knees to get Wavy's height, Sue said, Wavona, I'm going to go now, and you're going to stay here with your aunt. Do you understand? The grown-ups talked to Wavy like she was a little kid, but at 5 she made a very adult gesture. A curt nod to dismiss Sue.
After Sue was gone, the 4 of us stood in the entryway, staring. Mom, Leslie, and I at Wavy. Wavy seemed to have X-ray vision, staring through the living room wall at the Venus oil lamp that hung on the other side. How did she know it was there to stare at it? Well, why don't we go upstairs and get Wavona into some dry clothes? Mom said. In my room, Wavy stood between the 2 beds dripping onto the rug. Mom looked anxious, but I was thrilled to have my real live cousin in my room. Here, Amy, why don't you help her unpack while I get a towel? Mom retreated, leaving us alone. I opened an empty drawer and unpacked Wavy's bag. Another hand-me-down sundress as threadbare as the one she had on. 2 pairs of panties, an undershirt, a flannel nightgown, and a new baby doll, smelling of fresh plastic. This will be your dresser. I didn't want to sound like my mother, like an adult. I wanted Wavy to like me. After I put the clothes in the drawer, I held the doll out to her. Is this your baby? She looked at me. Really looked at me. And that's how I knew her eyes weren't brown. Her head moved left, right, back to center. No.
Well, we can put it in here to keep it safe, I said.
Mom returned with a towel, which she tried to put over Wavy's dripping hair. Before Mom could touch her, Wavy snatched the towel away and dried her own hair. After a moment of stunned silence, Mom said, Let's find something for you to wear. She laid out panties and an undershirt on the bed. Without any embarrassment, Wavy peeled off the sundress and dropped it on the floor before stepping out of her tennis shoes. She was almost as bony as the kids in the UNICEF ads, her ribs sticking out through the dry cotton undershirt she put on. I offered her my favorite corduroy pants and plaid shirt, but she shook her head. With her thumb and first finger, she plucked at an invisible skirt. Mom looked helpless. She wants her dress, I said. She needs something warmer. So I went into my closet and found a Christmas party dress I hated the one time I wore it. Navy velvet with a lace collar, it was too big for Wavy, but it suited her. With her hair already drying to blonde wisps, she looked like she had stepped out of an old photograph. At lunch, Wavy sat at the table but didn't eat anything. Same thing at dinner and breakfast the next morning. Please, sweetie, just try a bite. Mom looked exhausted, and she'd only been a stay-at-home aunt one day. I love my mother. She was a good mother. She did arts and crafts projects with us, baked with us, and took us to the park. Until we were practically teenagers, Mom tucked us into bed every night. Whatever Wavy needed, it wasn't that. The first night, Mom tucked Wavy and me into bed, me with my Winnie the Pooh, and Wavy with the baby doll she said wasn't hers. As soon as Mom left the room, Wavy threw off her covers and I heard the thud of the doll hitting the floor. If something else had happened to make the room go dark, if Leslie had played a prank or the bulb had burned out, I would have screamed for Mom. But when Wavy turned off my nightlight, I shivered under my covers, afraid, but excited. After she lay down again, she spoke. Her voice was small and quiet, just what you would expect from a tiny blonde elf child.
Cassiopeia, Cepheus, Ursa Minor, Cygnus, Perseus, Orion.
Since she had finally spoken, I grew brave enough to ask,
What does it mean?
Names of stars.
Until then, I hadn't known the stars had names. Arm extended, finger pointing, Wavy traced out shapes above her head, as though she were guiding the movements of the stars, a conductor directing a symphony. The next night, Wavy smiled at me as Mom crawled around looking for the unwanted doll. A minute after we were tucked in,
The baby was again among the dust bunnies under the bed. Eventually that became the doll's name, Dust Bunny. If Mom failed to look for the doll at bedtime, I said, "Oh no, I think Dust Bunny is missing again," to make Wavy smile. While I had a growing friendship with Wavy, my mother had only anxiety. In the first month, Mom took Wavy to the doctor 3 times because she wasn't eating. The first time, a nurse tried to put a thermometer in Wavy's mouth. It didn't end well. The other 2 times, Wavy mounted the scale and the doctor pronounced, "She's underweight, but not dangerously so. She must be eating something." Dad said the same thing, and he had evidence to back it up. One night, he came home from work after we were all in bed and woke us up shouting, "Oh, God damn it! What are you doing? What are you doing?" Wavy wasn't in her bed, so I ran downstairs alone. I found Dad in the kitchen with the trash can lid in one hand and his briefcase in the other. I'd never been in the kitchen that late. In the day, it was a warm, sunny place, but behind Dad, the basement door stood open and dark, like the mouth of a monster. "What's the matter, Daddy?"
"It's nothing. Go back to bed."
He put the lid on the trash and laid his briefcase on the table.
"What's going on, Bill?"
Mom came up behind me and put her hand on my shoulder.
"She was eating out of the trash."
"What? Amy, what are you..."
"Not Amy. Your niece."
Mom didn't take Wavy to the doctor again to complain about her not eating. After failing to solve that crisis, Mom became obsessed with sewing for Wavy. The dresses you could buy hung on her like sacks and were too frilly, which Wavy hated. The first day she wore my Christmas party dress, she tore the lace collar off. So Mom sewed dozens of dresses that Wavy unraveled, plucking at the seams until a thread came loose. From there, she could unravel a dress in less than a week. Mom rehemmed her dresses each time they came through the wash. It slowed the unraveling down, which was a practical solution. But Mom didn't want a solution. She wanted a reason. One of the book club ladies said, "Does she have toileting problems?" Mom frowned, shook her head. "No, there's no trouble like that. She'll be 6 in July." Wavy and I eavesdropped from the other side of the kitchen door. Her games all involved sneaking around and finding people's secrets, like the cigarettes my father hid in a coffee can in the garage.
"I wonder if she's acting out over some inappropriate contact," the book club lady said. "You think she might have been molested?"
another lady said, sounding shocked but excited. That conversation led to Wavy's first visit to a therapist. She stopped unraveling her dresses, and Mom went around looking triumphant. To Dad, she said, "I think we've had a breakthrough." Then she discovered the curtains in the guest bedroom, which were what Wavy took to unraveling when she stopped doing it to her clothes. Mom and Dad yelled at each other while Wavy stared through them.
"Why does there have to be something wrong with her?"
Dad said.
"Maybe she's just weird. God knows your sister's weird enough. I don't have time for you to get hysterical over everything she does. We have to wrap up the books on the fiscal year end."
"I'm worried about her. Is that so horrible of me? She never talks. What's going to happen to her?"
"She does too talk," Leslie said. "I hear her talking at night to Amy."
Mom slowly turned to all of us, narrowed in on me.
"Is that true? Does she talk to you?"
She stared into my eyes, pleading with me. I nodded.
"Well, what does she talk about?"
"It's a secret."
"There can't be secrets, Amy. If she tells you something important, you have to tell me. You want to help Vonnie, don't you?"
Mom got down on her knees in front of me, and I saw how it was. She would make me tell my secret. I started to cry, knowing I would tell, and it wouldn't help Mom or Wavy. It would just rob me of something precious. Wavy saved me. With her hand over her mouth, she said,
"I don't want to talk about it."
My mother's eyes bulged.
I...
She couldn't get a word out, and even Dad looked stunned.
The silent ghost girl could speak in complete sentences. I want you to go back to the therapist, Mom said.
No.
Things might have gotten better after that, if it hadn't been for the other secret between Wavy and me. She liked to sneak out of the house at night, and I went with her. Breezing down the stairs on bare feet, we eased open the kitchen door and walked around the neighborhood. Sometimes we just looked. Other times we took things. The night of Wavy's 6th birthday, when she had left her cake uneaten, she jimmied open Mrs. Nyblack's screen door. We crept across the kitchen to the refrigerator where Wavy pressed her finger to the lever to keep the light inside off. On the bottom shelf sat a half-eaten lemon pie, which we carried away. Crouched under the weeping willow in the Gorings' backyard, Wavy tore out a chunk of pie with her bare hand and gave me the plate. She went around the corner of the garden shed, and when she came back, her piece of lemon pie was gone. No, she wasn't starving. Some nights we gathered things, a wine bottle scavenged from the gutter, a woman's high-heeled shoe from the median of the highway where we weren't supposed to go, an old hand mixer abandoned outside the Methodist church's back door. We collected our treasures into a metal box stolen from the neighbor's garage and secreted it along our back fence behind the lilac bushes. When autumn came, the lilacs lost their leaves and Dad found the box of treasure, including Mrs. Nyblack's heavy glass pie plate, her name written on the bottom of it on a square of masking tape. Mom returned it to Mrs. Nyblack, who must have told her how the pie plate went missing, stolen out of her fridge on a hot July night, a trail of small dirty footprints left on the linoleum. Or maybe something else made Mom suspicious. As the weather got colder, I wanted to stay at home in bed. But when Wavy got up and dressed, I did too. If I didn't go, she would go alone. Half of my fear was that something would happen to her. The other half was a fear that she would have adventures without me. So I went with her, shivering against the cold while my heart pounded with excitement. At the library, Wavy went up on tiptoe to reach her spindly arm into the book return. In the day, my mother would have driven us to the library to check out books. But stealing books was sweeter. Wavy smiled and withdrew her arm to reveal treasure. The book was thin enough to pass through the return the wrong way, but it wasn't a kiddie book. Salome, the spine said. We leaned our heads together to consider the strangeness of an adult book with pictures. Odd pictures. The cover was worn and layered with clear tape to protect it, and the pages were heavy. It felt special. As I reached to turn the page, a pair of headlights fell on us where we crouched beside the book deposit. Wavy darted away, but I froze when my father yelled, "Amy!" Like in a fairy tale, where knowing someone's name gives you power, my father was able to capture me. My mother got out of the car and ran across the library parking lot. She looked so ferocious, loping toward me in her nightgown and coat, that I expected a blow. Punishment. Instead, she jerked me into her arms and pressed me to her chest. After that, I had to tell everything. About the late-night wandering. Not the stars. That was still my secret. Mom cried and Dad yelled,
"I know you mean well, Brenda. You want to help her. I get that. But when her behavior starts endangering our children, it's time to choose. We can't keep her. She's out of control."
The police came to make a report, to get a picture, to put out a bulletin. The neighbors turned out to look for Wavy, but at dawn she returned on her own. I woke to more yelling and crying. That afternoon, Grandma came to get Wavy.
"It's a horrible idea. A stupid idea," Mom said.
I marveled that she could talk to Grandma like that. It didn't seem possible to get away with saying something like that to your mother.
"You can't keep an eye on her all the time. You can't stay up all night."
"What would be the point? I suppose she will do a little wandering. From what I remember, you and Val did some wandering when you were kids."
"That was different. We were teenagers, and it was a safer time."
"Pfft," Grandma said. "Think of your health, Helen,"
Dad said. You haven't been as strong since the chemo, Mom.
Grandma blew out a big puff of air, the same way she used to exhale cigarette smoke, and shook her head.
Tell me your solution. Foster care? Send her to live with strangers?
We'll keep her, Mom said.
No, we won't.
Dad stood up and blocked my view, so I'll never know what look passed between him and Mom. But when he went to the counter to pour himself more coffee, Mom nodded.
She might as well come home with me today, Grandma said.
I sat on Wavy's bed while Grandma packed her suitcase. There wasn't much to pack. A dozen dresses that had survived the great unraveling. Some socks and underwear. The hairbrush that she sometimes let me run through her silky fine hair. The last thing into the suitcase was Dust Bunny, the baby doll. Grandma put it in the suitcase. Wavy took it out. Mom put it in. Wavy took it out. It was the only toy Wavy had.
Nothing belongs to you,
she told me once when Leslie and I fought over a favorite Barbie that later disappeared. Wavy took Dust Bunny out of the suitcase and handed it to me.
A gift?
Then it was time for her to go. Grandma hugged us all while Wavy stood near the door. Mom tried to hug her too, but she skittered away, slipping past my mother to hug me. Not close enough for our bodies to touch, she rested her hands on my shoulders and sniffed my hair. When she released me, she ran out the front door.
You see how it is? Mom said.
She's her own girl. You were too.
Grandma smiled and picked up Wavy's bag. After Thanksgiving, I found the real gift Wavy had left me in the closet under the stairs. When Mom pulled out the boxes of Christmas decorations, I crawled in to sweep up loose tinsel and a broken ornament. Tucked in the very back was the stolen book. Salome.
2. Grandma. October 1975. Irv and I raised one daughter who turned out fine. Brenda married a good man, had nice kids, kept a clean house, and worked hard. Valerie, our youngest. I don't know what happened. I suppose nowadays she would be diagnosed with something. But at the time, we lived with her behavior. For example, her germ problem. There was a time when she washed her hands 100 times a day, until the skin cracked and bled. I made her wear gloves to help her feel clean. 2 dozen pairs of white gloves that I washed and ironed every day. Then, her junior year in high school, she got pregnant and ran away with Liam Quinn. We didn't like him, but we'd never tried to keep her away from him. He was a troublemaker, and I didn't feel he treated Valerie right. The sort of boy who thinks he's the center of the universe. Later, I found out he was worse than just a selfish boy. I found out he'd gotten her mixed up with the sorts of things that put her in prison. As for that whole mess, it wearied my heart. I hoped Brenda wouldn't hate me when she found out how much of Irv's pension I cashed out to pay for Valerie's lawyers. I'd hoped to do college money for Amy and Leslie, but there was nothing left for that. The first day I took Wavana home with me, she didn't speak. To be honest, she didn't talk for weeks. That's harder on your nerves than you might think, having another person in the room who won't speak. It turned me into a real chatterbox. I narrated everything I did, the way I had for Irv when he got bad at the end. The first night, Wavana didn't eat dinner. The next morning, no breakfast. By lunch the next day, I started to get a taste of why Brenda looked so broken. 3 days of worrying, before I had the sense to count things in the fridge and cupboard to tell what she was eating. At bedtime, I had 6 cheese slices in cellophane, 9 apricots in the crisper, 13 saltines in the open tube. In the morning, only 5 cheese slices. 7 apricots, 10 saltines. Not enough to keep a mouse alive. But she managed on it. The second day, I set out some new toys I'd bought her on the coffee table in the den. It had out-of-fashion pine paneling and shag carpet, but we'd used it as our family room when Irv was alive, so it was full of mostly happy memories. I spent the day piecing a quilt for a church fundraiser and watching the TV. Wavana sat on the sofa, staring at the wall or the TV, or nothing. The girl had a 100-yard stare like Irv had when he came back from the war. Once she got up and I thought, finally, she's bored. She'll do something. Play with her toys. She went to the powder room. The toilet flushed and the sink ran. Back she came to the couch. The Barbie, the stuffed elephant, and the Lincoln log stayed in their packages. And eventually they disappeared. After 2 weeks, I did what I should have done first. I bought some flashcards, letters, colors, shapes, numbers, the kind of thing they use in kindergarten classes. The next morning, I made her a nice bowl of oatmeal and went out of the kitchen for a good 15 minutes. I spent the time calling the gals in my bridge club to tell them I wasn't coming that afternoon. When I went back to the kitchen, sure enough, there was less oatmeal. I cleared the table and got out the alphabet cards. A is for apple. I knew she wasn't going to parrot back what I said, but at least she'd be seeing and hearing them. I went through the whole deck that way. When I finished, Wavana walked over to the counter and got the grocery pad. Some claptrap thing Irv built that held a roll of adding machine tape and had a hole drilled in it for a golf pencil. Wavana rolled out some paper and started writing the alphabet. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I reached over and put my finger on the A. Do you know how to say that one? Wavana considered my finger for a second before she said,
A.
What about this one?
B.
This one? She sighed and said,
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Silly grandma. Come Monday, I enrolled her for school. The first day, after I dropped her off at school, I took a 2-hour nap. The second day, I went for some much-needed beautification. Old women need sprucing up, and my hair was starting to look bedraggled. The third day, I don't remember what I did, but on the fourth day I went to Bridge Club. I had a martini and a lovely raucous time with the gals. They were expecting me to tell them all about Wavana, and I pretended to be the proud grandma. Oh, she has the finest baby-down blonde hair. She already knows her ABCs. Nothing really about her. I held Leslie in my arms after she was born. Same with Amy. They were my granddaughters. My babies. I flashed their pictures and bragged on every little accomplishment. Wavana? I'd never seen her until Brenda got custody of her. I know you're supposed to love the hard ones more, but most of what I felt was pity. Her wispy hair and scrawny shoulders were so sad. And then those empty looks. Leaving Bridge Club, though, I felt like it was going to be okay. I would learn to love Wavana the way I loved Leslie and Amy. She would learn to love me. When I got to the school, Wavana didn't come out. I waited for a few minutes before I went into the front office, where I was met by the school principal and Mrs. Barry, Wavana's teacher. I'd handed Wavana off to her on the first day in the school office. She was a friendly woman with a big smile. But that day, she was a hysterical, sobbing mess. Wavana had run away from school. I cried, but mostly I remember thinking, this is how it started with Valerie. Of course, skipping school didn't start with Valerie until she was in high school, but all the same, I had a sinking feeling I had failed. At 8 o'clock, I went home and waited to hear from the police. I held the phone on my lap as I soaked my feet. I'd walked I didn't know how many blocks, knocking on doors all around the school. I needed to call Brenda, but I couldn't bear the thought of saying, "You were right. I can't handle her." My doorbell rang, and I didn't know what to feel. Hopeful, terrified. With my feet wet, I went to the door. Ivana stood on the porch alone, shivering. Once she was in the house, I locked the door, like that would keep her from escaping. "You scared me so much. What if something had happened to you?" I knew yelling wasn't the best way to communicate with her, but I couldn't help myself. "Never, never do that again. Do you understand me?" She nodded. But I knew that nod from Valerie. It meant, "I understand you, but that doesn't mean I'm going to do what you say." After I called the police to tell them Wavana was home, I made her some soup and counted out a pile of crackers. While I cried in the bathroom, she ate a few spoonfuls and 2 saltines. I couldn't go on like that, but I couldn't let her go into foster care. Would anyone else eye the level of soup in her bowl as carefully as I did? Would a stranger count crackers to make sure my granddaughter was eating? I cleared the table and brewed some decaf. When I was sure I was calm, I said, "Wavana, will you please come into the kitchen and talk to Grandma?" She didn't sit down, but she stood waiting for me to talk. "If you run away from school, they're going to take you away from me and make you live with strangers. I don't want that to happen. I want you to stay here with Grandma." She didn't react to that, but I didn't expect her to. I could have had a French poodle dancing the tango with a monkey on my head and she wouldn't have reacted. "Will you tell me what happened at school? Why did you run away? If you'll tell me, I'll try to make sure it doesn't happen again." It was like with the alphabet. She had to prepare herself. But after a moment, she said,
"The loud lady touches me."
My stomach almost gave up the coffee I'd drunk. That sweet woman? I couldn't imagine her doing something like that to a child. In my mind, that's what bad touching was.
"Touches you?"
She stretched her arms toward me, her hands curled into menacing claws, and then brought them back tightly to her chest.
"She hugs you?" I said.
A nod.
"And you don't like that?"
She shook her head seriously. I was sick with relief, and was knowing how awful the world looked to Wavana. Of course she never hugged me, and whenever I touched her, she shrugged out from under my hand. The next day we went to school, and I did what I should have done the first day. I walked her directly to class, planning to explain everything to Mrs. Barry. All that went out the window when I reached the classroom. In the center of the room sat 3 children in wheelchairs. I don't mean to be cruel, but they were drooling vegetables. In one corner, a child flopped around on blue rubber floor mats. The school could paint the walls as bright a shade of yellow as they wanted and hang up all the pretty mobiles in the world, but it was a horrible place. I couldn't imagine Wavana spending 5 minutes there, let alone the 4 days I'd left her there. Mrs. Barry hurried over with a big smile and said,
"Oh, Mrs. Morrison, what a relief. Wavana, honey, you had us so worried."
That was the day I earned Wavana's trust. Mrs. Barry swooped toward us, clearly planning to deliver an enormous smothering hug. I spread my feet and put out my arm to block her. "Mrs. Barry, we need to talk to someone about changing classes." She made a wounded face as we backed away from her. I had nothing against the woman, but I was too old to beat around the bush. When I sat down with the school counselor, I took the same approach. I looked her square in the eye and said, "My granddaughter is not retarded." "Mrs. Morrison, we don't use words like that anymore. Our concern is that her speech problems are a sign of developmental delays.
I don't mean it to offend, but she's not stupid. Look here, Ivana. She didn't look at me, but I knew she was listening. Give me paper and a pencil. The counselor slid a sheet of paper and a ballpoint pen across the desk. I scooted Wavana's chair closer and said, Go ahead and show her. Otherwise, you'll have to stay in the class with the loud lady. As soon as I mentioned the special education teacher, Wavana picked up the pen and put it to the paper. First, she wrote out her name, neat as can be. Below that, she wrote her alphabet. Capital A, small a. Capital B, small b. Capital C, small c. And on like that. Under that, she put her numbers. Then she did something I didn't even know she knew. She turned the paper over and wrote, Cassiopeia. Next to it, she drew 5 dots and connected them. Then 7 more dots that she labeled Cepheus. She filled the paper up that way. The only ones I recognized were the Big and Little Dippers. The way the counselor's jaw dropped down set me to giggling. I laughed right in that poor woman's face. Laughed until I cried. Before Wavana, I'd been feeling pretty good. My cancer was in remission, and I had myself a nice retirement planned before Wavana moved in. After everything I'd been through in the last month, I needed a good laugh. They put her in a regular classroom, but I told them right up front, Don't give her a nicey-nice teacher. I spelled it out for them. Nobody could touch her. They couldn't expect her to talk, but they shouldn't assume she wasn't listening and learning. I didn't make requests, and I didn't apologize. Things weren't perfect after that, but they got better. She lived with me for almost 2 years, and in all that time, she touched me twice. On what would have been Irv's and my 40th anniversary, I had a little wine and got maudlin. Wavana touched my hand, my wedding ring. To comfort me, I think. The second time was right before Valerie got paroled, and I hired a lawyer to help her get custody of Wavana and the baby she'd had while she was in prison. We drove down to Tulsa for Leslie's birthday and had a fine old time, singing, wearing silly hats, and cheering as Leslie ripped open packages. After all the big hoopla, the 3 girls settled into the living room to play while Brenda and I cleaned up. I couldn't keep putting it off, so I sat down at the kitchen table and said, I've been talking to Valerie's lawyer about this transitional program she can get into.
I didn't know she still had a lawyer. Are you paying for that?
I didn't answer. I wanted it not to be her business. But maybe it was.
Fine. So Val's lawyer thinks she can get into some program?
Brenda cut a second slice of birthday cake. Her weight dogged her for years, because she ate when she was upset. It's for women with children to help her get back on her feet so she can take care of Donal and Wavana. I knew that would cause a ruckus. And it did.
Are you serious, Mom? Do you really think Val can take care of them? You know what Vonnie's like. That's Val's parenting skills right there. A daughter who won't speak, won't eat, and sneaks out at night.
She's doing better.
I know. You're doing so good with her.
Brenda laid her hand on my arm, and I could see she really was sorry she'd lost her temper. I want Wavana to be with her mother. I wanted to want that. I wanted things to be simple, and they never were.
Do you really think that's the best thing for her?
Val's been getting treatment. This program will put her in an apartment where she'll have a counselor. They'll make sure she takes her medicine and help her take care of the kids.
Well, what do you need to do? Is there paperwork?
I need you to go to her parole hearing and the custody hearing. You're going to have to do it, Brenda.
Why?
Metastasized.
Wavana had crept up so quietly, neither of us noticed her until she spoke.
What does she mean? Brenda said. Mom?
She must have overheard me talking with the doctor's office. The cancer is back. It's in my lungs and my liver. 3 months, they think,
maybe less. Now that we were talking about hard things, Leslie and Amy stopped playing Barbies and came to stand in the doorway next to Ivana. I tried to will Brenda to be strong, but she started shaking and crying. Amy and Leslie cried too. They were all crying, except Ivana. She crossed the kitchen and reached out to me. For a second, she laid her hand on my chest, touched those fake foam boobs I wore in my bra. I loved her then, right as I was getting ready to leave her.
3. Wavy. June 1977. Aunt Brenda didn't want me to stay with Grandma at the end.
Let Bill take her back to Tulsa. My friend Sheila is staying at the house to take care of the girls while I'm here, Aunt Brenda said.
She's going with you soon enough. Let her stay with me, Grandma said.
She held out her hand, and I went to her, even though I wasn't brave enough to touch her with Aunt Brenda there to see.
I love you, sweetie. I love you. Pretty soon I'm going to go and be with your Grandpa Irv, but God willing, you'll see me again, Ivana. Not for a long time, but someday, she said.
For a while, Grandma slept, and Aunt Brenda went into the kitchen to make coffee, but she sat at the table and laid her head down on her arms to cry. When the big clock should have chimed 3 o'clock, it didn't, because no one remembered to wind it. Aunt Brenda was asleep.
I wish I weren't afraid. It seems so silly to be afraid, but it feels like driving to a new place and not knowing where I'm going.
Grandma said when she woke up. We were alone, so I held her hand. I thought about Mr. Arsenikos, our neighbor where we lived before Mama got arrested. When Mama and Uncle Sean used to fight, Mr. Arsenikos let me hide on his back porch. He called me his stray cat and gave me bacon sandwiches. Sometimes they were just bacon grease spread on soft white bread, but sometimes they had whole pieces of bacon on them. After I ate, he would sit out on the porch swing and tell me the names of stars. He used his cane to scratch them out in the dirt so I could learn them. He was a sailor on a boat called USS San Diego, which is also a city in California. His boat sank in the Great War, and he knew which way to row the life raft toward land because of the stars. On the chenille bedspread that was stretched over Grandma's belly, I drew Ursa Minor with his tail pointing down. Ursa Minor is north tonight. Little Dipper, I said, because Grandma called it that. I drew it in the palm of her hand so she would remember. She nodded. By the time the sun came up, she was asleep again, and she didn't wake up. Mr. Arsenikos said if you knew the constellations, you would never get lost. You could always find your way home. At Grandma's funeral, the only real thing was Grandma in a fancy box. Everything else was pretend. Aunt Brenda pretended she wasn't mad at Mama.
"Oh, Val, I'm so glad to see you," she said.
Uncle Bill pretended, too. Before Mama came, he said,
"Let's get this over with and get her out of our lives."
But then he hugged her and said,
"You look great, Val. You need to visit more often."
"I want us to get together for Christmas. We can't just see each other for funerals," Aunt Brenda said. "I know. We have to keep in touch. I can't believe it's been so long since we saw each other." "I've missed you so much," Mama said. Then she brought the new baby to me. "This is your little brother, Vonnie. This is Donald. Give him a kiss."
I didn't know why Mama wanted me to kiss him, when she was the one who said the mouth was a dirty place. In case it was a trick, I only pretended to kiss him. After the funeral, Mama and Donald and I went to the transitional program.
"Everything's going to be different this time," she said.
The first 2 weeks at the program, it was different. She was good, Mama, and followed the rules. She washed our clothes and put them away in drawers in the new apartment. She cooked dinner,
She didn't hide in her bedroom and smoke her pipe like she did before she got arrested. Then, one day she woke up scary mama instead of good mama, and I knew things weren't going to be different. I never knew which mama she would be when she woke up. I read the books she got from the program. She was supposed to reconnect with your family. That meant we were supposed to eat dinner as a family. But every night, after scary mama fixed dinner, she sat on the back porch, smoking cigarettes and yelling through the screen door for me to eat. I wasn't falling for that. I knew what could happen if she caught me eating. Even good mama could all of a sudden say, "Don't eat that, that's dirty," and stick her fingers in my mouth to get the food out. Even good mama could pour burning Listerine on my tongue to get it clean. She always said, "Things can get into you that way." Bad things could get in through your mouth and make you sick, just like my germs could get on other things and make them dirty. When Megan the social worker came to check on us, Mama smiled so hard it made my stomach hurt. She wasn't going to be good Mama. "So, what are we cooking for dinner tonight?" Megan said. "Oh, we're having spaghetti." That's what Mama always fixed. I had Grandma's recipe book, but Mama wouldn't let me cook. She didn't want me to make a mess. "How is everything else?" Megan said. "You missed one of the group sessions this week." "Oh, everything's super. I just had a little headache, that's all. Thanks for checking on us." Mama smiled and smiled, but as soon as Megan left, she said, "Fucking busybody. It's like a sitcom with a nosy neighbor always dropping in. Except you'd kill your neighbor if she dropped by the way they do on TV. Kill her. God, I don't want to be on this stupid TV show anymore." While Mama was yelling, Donald took her hairbrush out of her purse and put it in his mouth. Before I could take it away from him, Mama saw. Once when I was little, I put her pipe in my mouth just to see what it was like, since she liked it so much. Boiling and bleach could get most things clean, but not the pipe. It was so dirty after I put it in my mouth that it had to be thrown away. Mama grabbed the hairbrush out of my hand and carried it into the kitchen. I knew she was coming back with Listerine or bleach, so I picked up Donald and carried him into the bedroom. Scary Mama dragged me out of the closet and spanked me until the brush left bloody spots on my legs, but I stopped her from putting Listerine in Donald's mouth. After that, I took care of Donald. I fed him and bathed him, because Scary Mama, she would give baths so hot it made your skin bubble. The program's book also said, "Be compliant on your meds." But Mama wasn't. "How am I supposed to keep all these fucking pills straight?" she said. But when I tried to read the bottles, she smacked me. When she stopped taking her pills and started bringing home bottles of whiskey, she was Scary Mama all the time. One night, after the whiskey was finished, when Donald and I were supposed to be asleep, I heard Mama's keys jingle. The apartment door opened and closed. I wasn't afraid to be alone, but Donald was too small to take care of himself. He was standing in his crib, whimpering. We were both hungry, because Mama had thrown dinner in the trash can. She said the spaghetti was dirty and the milk was sour. Even good Mama would throw dinner away, but sometimes Scary Mama did it to be mean. The spaghetti was sticky and still warm in the middle, and it was safer to eat it from the trash than have Mama see me eat it. After I ate, I took the jug of milk out of the trash and filled a baby bottle. Donald drank it all, and after the bottle was empty, I cleaned it and put it away so Mama wouldn't know. I never knew which was dirtier, my mouth or what I put in my mouth. Liam was like that, too. He was a bad thing that could get into you. He wasn't supposed to touch me. He would get me dirty. When Mama was mad at him, she told me, "Don't you call him Daddy. He's not your daddy. He's not to be trusted." She would make me say it. "Liam, not to be trusted." When she was mad at me, she said, "Don't you touch him. Don't even look at him." I was dirtier than Liam, because I wasn't supposed to touch anyone except Mama and Donald,
and sometimes not even them. I broke the rule when I touched Grandma and Amy. The day after she left me alone with Donald, Mama called Dee and asked her to come visit. Sometimes Mama said Dee was her best friend. Sometimes she called her a dirty whore. They must have been friends that night, because Dee came and brought Mama a new pipe. They smoked and drank all night, and talked about Liam. He gets inside me, like an infection. All he has to do is look at me with those eyes. I could just drown in them. The way Mama said it, I knew she wanted him to get inside her. She wanted him to infect her. He has beautiful eyes, Frank Sinatra eyes. Are you really going to leave him? Dee said. I don't know. What should I do? Mama was so drunk and high, she didn't even care that she drank out of the whiskey bottle after Dee. He wants to see you. You owe him that much. The next night after I was in bed, Liam came. It was easy for me to listen to them talk, because my bed was against the other side of the wall. I can't be with you, Mama said to him. They won't let me finish the program if I'm with you.
The program? The fucking program? What are they going to do for you?
I'm getting my secretarial certificate.
Are you kidding me? Baby, I'm here to take care of you. When we got married, I said I'd take care of you. Pack up your shit and let's go.
When Mama came into Donald's and my room, she was laughing. Wake up, babies. We're going with Daddy. Her hand was soft and floating when she laid it on my head. She didn't even notice that I was dressed under the covers, ready to sneak out. Donald and I lay in the back seat while Liam drove us away. I watched the stars go by out the back window. First we went to a motel, and Mama took the pills Liam gave her. For a few days, she was happy Mama and said nice things. Then Liam took us to the farmhouse that looked down on the meadow.
Me and Butch got business to take care of, he said.
Riding your bike and screwing around on me? That kind of business? I hate you, and I hate this fucking dump, Mama said. She hated the warped floors, the rust stains in the bathtub, and the way the windows rattled when the wind blew.
Baby, don't be that way.
Liam's quiet voice meant something bad could happen. You think you can just leave me here to wait for you? You can think again because I... Mama looked surprised when Liam smacked her mouth, but that always happened. While she was crying, he crept down on her, with his hand on the back of her neck, and said soft things. Then he left, and Mama took off her pretty dress and lay in bed all day. Sad Mama didn't care when Donald cried, and he cried a lot. I'm so alone, she said. Donald and I didn't count. 4. Wavy. July 1977. The first day at the farmhouse, while Liam and Mama screamed at each other, Donald and I hid in the attic. The second day, when Butch came to bring Mama pills, Donald and I hid in the cellar. The third day, I walked across the meadow to see the windmill. I thought that day was my birthday, but I didn't know, because the calendar at the farmhouse was from 1964. Nobody looked for me in the meadow. Not Donald, who wasn't old enough to walk. Not Mama, who was sleeping while Donald cried. Not Liam, who had business to take care of. Nobody looked for me until the giant came at sunset. I was walking back to the farmhouse to feed Donald when a headlight bobbed up the road. I ran to where the meadow touched the road and stepped out to watch the motorcycle roar past. The giant turned his head to look at me, and his hair fluttered like starling wings. Gravel spit out of the wheels, and then the motorcycle skidded and fell. The giant tumbled off and the bike slid into the meadow, still rumbling, its tires spinning. When I got to him, the giant was lying in the road with his arms and legs spread out. I don't know why I wasn't afraid. Maybe because he was so big. Bigger than everyone who made me feel small.
maybe because the sky was purple, blue, red, orange, and the moon was a tiny sliver of fingernail. I squatted beside him and touched his shoulder, where his black T-shirt was dusty. 3 long scratches ran down his left arm and dripped blood on the road. He opened his eyes and whispered,
"Sweet Jesus, are you real?"
I nodded. It was safer than talking. Words were complicated and you had to open your mouth. Things could get in you that way, too. The giant sat up. He cupped a hand under his elbow and winced.
"Where did you come from?"
he said. I pointed toward the farmhouse.
"You're not an angel?"
I shook my head. He had to let go of his elbow to get up on his knees. Air hissed out between his teeth and his arm hung down limp. The giant needed me, the way Donald did. That made me brave enough not to run away when he laid his hand on my head.
"You got leaves in your hair," he said.
He picked them out with his big, shaky hand. When he looked at me, I looked back. His eyes were so soft, I was sure he wouldn't get inside me like an infection. Not like Liam and his hard blue eyes. Silly to think I could help a giant, but I put my arm around him, and he leaned on me. Quick, so he wouldn't catch me. I breathed him in. His oily hair smelled of mint and dirt and blood. Then he got on his feet, and I put my face close to his T-shirt to fill my nose with the rest of him. Sweat and gasoline and something delicious. Bacon. Together, we shuffled toward the bike because his ankle was hurt, too.
"Can you turn it off? Get the key out?" the giant said.
On the end of the keychain swung a little silver skull. He didn't have a hand to take it, so I tucked it into his jeans pocket. His belt buckle was big and silver with 3 cloudy red stones, like Orion's belt. With his hand on my shoulder, we walked up the road to the house. He talked the whole way. Grandma talked too much, afraid of quiet. But he wasn't. The talking was for me, to make me feel safe. The giant told me about the bike. A panhead, 74 cubic inches, custom paint job, probably fucked all to shit. He said I surprised him standing in the meadow with my hair blowing. Like a fairy, he said. When I touched the big tattoo on his arm, he told me about it. Horseshoe. Lucky clover.
"I tell you, I'm not feeling like a lucky motherfucker today," he said.
He asked me if I'd seen foxes in the meadow. But asking was only to leave a quiet space for me to say something if I wanted. At the stone steps that went up from the road to the house, he sat down, holding his arm tight and breathing hard.
"Can you go call somebody for me?" he said.
The phone was on the kitchen wall. I knew how it worked, but I never used it. You can't smell people on the other end of phones, and ears are openings for things to get in you. Blood ran out of the giant's head and his T-shirt drank it up. Something white that I thought was a bone poked out of his arm. I nodded. He told me the numbers. Then he wrote them out with his finger on my arm in streaks of blood.
"Do you know your numbers?"
He thought I couldn't read because I was small. To show him I understood, I put my hand up to my ear to make a pretend phone. Then I thought of a problem.
"You?"
I said.
"I'm Kellen. Jesse Joe Kellen."
I started to go, but he said,
"Wait, what's your name?"
I'd never said it before. I tried it once without sound to see how it felt in my mouth. Then with breath, "Wayvana."
"You go call for me, Wayvana. Tell him what happened."
I ran up to the house and dialed with a shaky finger, turning the little circle and waiting for it to chatter back around after each number. Ring, ring, then click, and someone breathing.
"Who is this?"
Liam said. A cold shiver went all over me. Liam not to be trusted.
"Who the fuck is this?"
My throat felt so tight, I didn't know how the words would get out. I swallowed them down over and over until they finally came out. "His bike wrecked. Kellen." Saying his name, I knew the giant was worth the danger of Liam talking in my ear.
Vonnie? Is that you? Where the fuck is Val?
Sleeping. Kellen wrecked. On his bike. The words hurt my throat like a